no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a off.
He's listening to you.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging. Mostly because there's no grass on the golf course. But there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
Spurt, 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 spurt.
What is happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. This is episode 94. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. We are still talking about the Trump administration and their takeover of the golf courses in Washington, D.C., as they have officially terminated the lease of the National Links Trust. We've got Washington Post reporter Rick Mays on the podcast. He gives us about a half an hour to talk about his reporting. He's done three separate articles on this story since it originally broke. Before we get to that conversation, there's already a ton written about this just in the last 48 hours all over the internet, social media, other websites, and there's a lot of commentary. I've gotten a lot of messages. There's tons of comments even just on my social posts. And the two kind of talking points that I want to talk to personally about folks that seemingly either outright support this move by the Trump administration or at least tentatively waiting until more information comes out. The two main points that I'm seeing are one, that National Links Trust was quote unquote dragging their feet, that it took 5 years to start Rock Creek Park. And the second was this whole issue around rent and offsets. And now the accusation by the Department of Interior that the National Links Trust owed $8 million in back rent. The first, I'll say, because I even have golf friends myself that have kind of asked, why has it taken 5 years for National Links Trust to get started on these projects? Or, you know, what have they actually done in the last 5 years? The reality is they've done a ton. They've done a lot. You can go to National Links Trust website or their social media where they list a lot of their actual projects that they've done. But as far as a timeline, they've had to walk a delicate balance of operating these golf courses and improving programs around the community, making sure that the golf courses are in better shape than they were before they took over in 2020, which was not great, all the while raising money and saving money for the actual big renovations themselves. The actual big renovations themselves, which they're going to do on all three golf courses, they were not allowed to get started until the National Park Service gave them approval. This is a separate approval from them actually winning the RFP. They've got to submit very specific plans and go through the permitting process, but those plans have to be approved once they're finalized by the National Park Service, which wasn't done at Rock Creek Park until just recently in the last year or so, and haven't been done to this date at Langston, East Potomac. National Links Trust does not have approval to start renovation at either of those two golf courses, and that hasn't come yet. Now, if you want to critique National Links Trust about maybe communicating some of why this is taking so long, or why some of the interagency bureaucracy holdups have occurred, I may give you that, but I also think National Links Trust has been in a really tight spot, because if they do kind of air the laundry of why some of the stuff is taking so long and explaining that certain agencies have taken longer than necessary, then they're putting those relationships in a tight spot and maybe extending that timeline even further than it needs to be. So I think just looking at it without diving into and reading some of the stuff and understanding why this may have taken so long, and just looking at the face of it and saying, oh, it's been taking 5 years, you've got to dive into the details a little bit. And the reality is National Links Trust has done a lot. And you've got, you know, a lot of agencies that are kind of involved in what's going on here. And just the idea that they could have renovated this in a really quick manner, once they became the operator and really tried to start getting some of these approvals, it just proved to take a lot longer than maybe both the National Park Service and National Links Trust had originally predicted when they signed the lease. The second on this notion of back paid rent and rent offsets and this kind of $8 million in capital investment. First of all, the lease is publicly viewable. You can search on the internet. You can see in the lease, and I believe it's section 5.6 of their lease with the National Park Service that talks about these rent offsets. And National Links Trust has said repeatedly that they've been in communication and got approvals by the National Park Service on a daily, weekly, monthly basis for the past 5 years. And the first they've heard about anything related to back paid rent or the unpaid rent is literally in the last couple of weeks. So the notion that they've been skipping out on rent seems to be quite far-fetched, especially when you're tying back to the method of operation of this administration, and you start to look at, you know, what is the real motivation behind the administration, the Department of Interior, and pointing it back to Donald Trump himself. The other question about, you know, what have they spent $8 million on? I think you really have to look at what's been going on there. First of all, they did a massive renovation of the East Potomac mini golf course. They've done a ton of tree removal, green expansions at all three golf courses. The Langston greens are a lot larger, running a lot better. The greens at East Potomac the same. And they've already done a lot of work at Rock Creek. And then, of course, the actual developing of these plans is not cheap to go through these processes and get them approved. Over 5 years, these costs do add up. And one thing that has been very little dispute of is these golf courses are in better shape than they were when they took over in 2020. And they literally had just gotten started. Work has already been done. I went up to Rock Creek Park a few weeks ago, walked up a do not enter path and took a look around, and work is actively being done at Rock Creek. All that's being halted right now. So based on all the facts out there, based on how this administration is operating, not just at these golf courses, but elsewhere, this is a really unfortunate situation. And I believe that the Nationalist Trust is getting a raw deal. And I'm happy they're continuing to operate the golf courses in the meantime, since the Trump administration doesn't seem to have a plan in place. And who knows, it might be a very slim glimmer of hope, but the fact that they're still operating these golf courses, that there still could be a hope that the two parties can work together, whether it's the administration deciding that this is not their biggest issue or wanting Nationalist Trust to run one or two of the other golf courses. Who knows what the future holds? I get into a lot of it here with Rick Mace of the Washington Post. There's a lot here. We really scratched the surface, but I hope you enjoy it. Before I get to the conversation, I want to thank our sponsor, the Golf Yards Premium High-End Golf Performance Center, coming to Arlington, Virginia in spring of 2026. And have everything you need to get your golf game right, get your body right, golfyards.com. Sign up for their wait list. Just follow them on social on the Golf Yards, and thank you to them for sponsoring this podcast. That's it. Let's get the conversation with Rick Mace of the Washington Post for episode 94 of the Beltway Golfer Podcast. Enjoy. Good morning, Rick. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy New Year. I appreciate you taking some time to jump on the podcast to talk about what is going on with the Trump administration, Nationalist Trust, and the three golf courses on National Park Service land in Washington, D.C. You've done, I think I counted three different articles in the Washington Post on this kind of stories timeline. So let's just start. There's a lot to get into, but let's just kind of start as you see it. What is kind of the timeline that has brought us to where we are today?
Yeah, well, I mean, at some point over the summer months, there started to be whispers, and I'm sure everyone in the D.C.'s golf community started hearing them, that the administration had an interest in specifically East Potomac. And that just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, the Interior Department, the National Park Service, they had some back and forth with National Link Trust. And it's, you know, not totally clear if, you know, they were negotiating in good faith, if Interior really had some things that they wanted ironed out, or if they kind of knew from the beginning that their end goal was to take control of that course. So there's little conversations that took place. And then finally on October 29th, the government sent a notice of default to National Links Trust. And normally that's a kind of letter that would spell out some things that needed corrective action. You know, there'd be bullet points or some list of things that the government felt was deficient. And then the lessee would have a chance to correct all those actions. So, you know, maybe that could have been course conditions or, you know, X, Y, and Z that needed attention. Well, this notice of default was a little bit unique in that it didn't list any corrective actions. In fact, the whole thing was two sentences long. So there were no details at all. And so I think from National League's perspective, they got this letter and they weren't quite sure what to do with it because they obviously wanted to keep the lease. They thought they had something that was going to be good for 50 years and they were well down the road in a lot of their projects.
Have you seen those two sentences that they gave Nationalist Trust?
Yeah.
And is it as vague as everybody makes it sound?
Yes, it is as sparse as you can imagine. I probably have a copy of it that I can pull up and just peek at. But
maybe I didn't search for that. Is that public? Is that out there with the exact language they used?
It is not public, but it is something that I was able to get over the course of my reporting.
Gotcha.
And it's just one of those things where, you know, it popped in and you're hoping if you're NLT, you're hoping there's some details that you can actually address. The first sentence of this thing I'm looking at now, it says the purpose of the letter is just to provide formal notice of default. And then the second sentence is, I look forward to continuing our discussions on the matter. So there's really no timeline laid out. There's no specifics at all of what to do. And that was signed by the Interior Solicitor, William Doffmeyer, who also signed the termination notice, which we can get into as well. So they had some chats behind the scenes and weren't quite sure what to do with them. And I think from their perspective, it became clear or increasingly clear that, you know, the government wasn't really interested in, you know, corrective action, and there weren't really cures or, you know, to be done. And so it's kind of curious in the termination letter when the government says, you know, the NLT failed to provide a cure proposal because they never asked for one. They never said what needed to be cured. The one thing in the October 29th letter that is mentioned is Exhibit D of the lease, and that is the timeline of projects.
Right.
So, it was a preliminary timeline that kind of said we're going to have this done by this date, this done by this date. But, it's very specific in Exhibit D that it's a general timeline. It's subject to change. And as we know, the permitting process and all that goes into those things, especially when it involves the government, takes a little bit longer than, anyone thinks it's going to be, at the outset.
And as I read, I only just got my hands on Exhibit D recently, and as I read it, it's not just subject to change; it's also subject to by approval of the lessor, the National Park Service. You know, they can't stick to the timeline without certain approvals. So it takes two to tango, kind of thing.
Yeah, and if you read through the statements that National Lease Trusts have said, or the interviews they've done, they've been pretty clear that they feel like they've worked hand in hand with National Park Service. So they feel like everything has kind of been approved, has been, they felt like they had an understanding, and the people they worked with on a day-to-day basis had no qualms. And so there's kind of people above them, above the people on the ground doing the work that kind of came in here and do have some issues. So, from NLT's perspective, they were doing things as fast as they can, and they were a lot of things they wanted to do didn't move as fast as they wanted, but they don't feel like it was their fault. They felt like it was, the process and the government and the compliance and permitting issues. So, from their perspective, again, they felt like the National Park Service knew every step of the way what they were doing, and they felt like they were working together, on each step.
Sure. So they issued the notice of default at the end of October, with two very vague sentences. Have you seen any specifics, during that? So they have 45 days to cure whatever the notice of default was. Have you seen any specifics that was sent by the administration or the DOI to National Lease Trust on what they could have done in that 45 day period?
I'm not sure if there's been any written proposals that went back and forth. I do believe that there were conversations that took place. And it's hard to say how detailed they were and how explicit they were. I think NLT's stance has been, we weren't given any kind of specific instructions or details. But then when you read through the termination notice, the government certainly makes it sound like they were expecting more of a detailed cure proposal. And so I think that's really where the folks at NLT are a little bit confused, because they were never told what to cure. So how could they put forward a proposal? So the termination notice Right. seems to cite some specifics that don't really match up with the default notice or what we know about the conversations that kind of took place between October 29th and the termination notice that went out last week.
The two areas that seem to be what folks are pointing to on the administration side, or maybe, and some of this, I'm just, looking through comments on, some of the different articles that have been posted, and even social media, the folks that are kind of wanting more details is the one on the timeline, which you just talked about, the Exhibit D of what NLT has done over the last 5 years. And then the second is, and this only seemed to come out in the last 24 hours, this idea that they were behind on rent. That there was there was $8 million of capital improvements it's been almost a challenge to follow the language. Some folks are saying that was rent that they didn't pay. National Lease Trust is saying, and I've read in the lease that there was offsets in it was specifically documented in the lease. What is your take on that?
Yeah, so a close read of the termination letter seems to cite the Exhibit D and the lack of progress done in these projects is the reason for termination. And it's almost as an aside where they bring up this unpaid rent idea. You know, it's not cited as a reason for the termination. It's just brought up. There's a series of, I don't know, 7 or 8 asterisks in the termination letter. And then it just has a kind of bold-faced subhead that says, NLT owes millions of dollars in unpaid rent to NPS. But it's not given as a reason for the termination. It's just more of like a, and here's another thing, you know, that we take issue with. And so, you know, I've talked to several folks about this unpaid rent idea. And as you alluded to, NLT, you know, for 5 years has held this lease. And this is the first they heard of these unpaid rent was within the past, you know, couple weeks. So, you know, the default notice didn't mention unpaid rent. None of their previous conversations or back and forth with the government apparently mentioned unpaid rent. It just popped up kind of at the 11th hour here, and then it was slid into the termination notice. So, and as you say, I mean, I think both sides kind of have different interpretations of this. Clearly, the government, the Interior Department, feels like NLT has slid by and hasn't been paying money due to the government. From NLT's perspective, as you said, you know, the lease specifically says you can have offset rent. And it also says that that's something they would negotiate with the leaseholder, with the National Park Service. So they feel like they had an agreement with NPS and they were raising money and putting that money into capital improvements. And they feel like in good faith, they negotiated rent offsets that were approved by NPS. Interior, which oversees NPS, seems to not think that NPS and NLT maybe properly negotiated came to an agreement that was sufficient, and they've decided that NLT owes all this money, even though NPS has apparently agreed to rent offsets. So it's not clear if this is why this was thrown in here. Again, it's not something that they're citing for the reasons for termination, and. You know, I don't know if bullying tactic is the right word, but it's almost like their government's just trying to provide a little bit bigger of a case why NLT is not been the perfect leasee to be running these parks.
So do you think that it's the Department of Interior potentially thinking that the National Park Service negotiated poorly and shouldn't have been approving these offsets all along? Or and that there's, you know, they're just kind of trying to almost like renegotiate under the order of Trump? Or do you think this is just simply the Trump administration just trying to find any way that they can kind of move forward and get their way and take over these courses?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of both of those kind of make sense. And we're reading tea leaves here a little bit because the government, at least, you know, their officials on the record are not providing a lot of details. It is interesting to me that the lease was signed by the National Park Service, but all of this, all this process, the termination process, has been handled by the Interior Department. So the National Park Service has been kind of a silent player in all of this. They're not responding to interview requests. They're not making statements. They're kind of leaving it to the Interior to talk about things. So, but yeah, if you just go strictly by what we see on paper, Interior, the lease says that NPS and NLT negotiated or had the right to negotiate these rent offsets. Interior seems to be saying that was improper. So it's hard to say at this point who from the Interior is saying that, why they're saying that, why they don't think that NPS was able to authorize those rent offsets. Those are certainly some of the questions we're still chasing down. And, you know, a lot of ways the termination notice just raised more questions than it provided answers, because not a lot of things kind of square together, whether it's with the October 29th date or with the actual language and terminology in the lease. And certainly doesn't square with what we know about NLT and what they've been doing over the past 5 years.
So the termination letter has been given. NLT has agreed to continue operating the courses essentially in the meantime, despite the fact they are no longer the lessee. Do you get the idea that the reason that is because the administration really has no existing plan or immediate plan for these courses? Because as I understand it, if NLT had not agreed to do that, those courses would have been closed effective immediately.
That's certainly what it looks like, right? I mean, usually if you're transitioning from, you know, property ownership or management, I mean, you're talking months and months, if not over a year, to kind of, you know, hand over the keys. There is no signs at all that the administration had any kind of plan for the day-to-day operations of these courses after termination. And I think if NLT thought there was a plan in place, they might not have been as willing to continue in their role running the three courses. So I think that's one of the remarkable things, is that they rushed to get this thing done by the end of the year without a real plan in place, at least nothing they've publicized or wanted to talk about. And you think they would want to talk about that a little bit. And again, we've asked the White House and the Interior and NPS all to say, hey, what is your plan here? What's the short-term plan? What's the long-term plan? And I think, you know, NLT almost did them a solid by stepping in and agreeing to hang around and, sure, and run these things while they sort it out. So who knows how long this transition is going to be? I don't think NLT knows. I don't think NPS knows. Maybe the end result here is that the government realizes that they're not capable of running these courses on a day-to-day basis, and NLT retains some kind of control, or they create a new lease. I don't know. I think it's a little bit too early to tell. But you know, apparently they're going to continue talks over the next few weeks and sort out some of those details.
And even going backwards a bit in the timeline, back to when kind of the Trump administration reached out to NLT, as I understand it, earlier on in the year to indicate that they were looking at all these courses, and NLT had put together, and I don't know the right way to phrase it, but essentially, I don't know if it was an advisory board, but a proposal that could kind of be a way that NLT could work with the Trump administration. And they brought in figures like Tiger Woods and Fred Ridley of Augusta National. Do you feel, and I asked Barry Zruggel about this in our last podcast, do you get the idea that the administration ever even considered that proposal where NLT could work hand in hand with the administration with this kind of advisory board of power players?
It's hard to say definitively. I'd say what we do know and what the government has been willing to say sure doesn't look like they were interested in a proposal. It seems more like they had their eyes and hearts set on taking over East Potomac, and they were going to make that happen. So I'm not sure what proposal could have been put forward, or if they did put one forward that was given real consideration. Again, that's one of those things I really wish the government was a little bit more forthcoming and transparent about the process here, because you'd want to know what exactly they considered and what would have been acceptable, or what NLT could have done. You feel like NLT was trying to put their best foot forward here, but they were kind of operating without a script, because they didn't know exactly what the government needed or wanted to see. And that's what kind of lends a little bit more evidence to this idea that, hey, the government was, they were going to bulldoze ahead and they were going to get that course no matter what. You know, we've kind of seen them do similar things, whether it's with the Kennedy Center or what they're doing with the East Wing of the White House. You know, there's not a lot of transparency in the process. We know they have a goal and they move toward that goal as quickly as possible, and maybe not necessarily considering all the legal ramifications or the potential consequences of some of those actions.
Have you seen other instances where, you know, whether it be this administration or other administrations, where a default on the lease is kind of handled in this manner? And has this kind of, is this hands-on by the White House itself? You know, how different does this feel than other instances?
Yeah, we spoke with several veteran NPS employees that have handled leases. And I should say, first off, these long-term leases are, I don't want to say unprecedented, but they are pretty, pretty extraordinary and remarkable. And that's what kind of made this lease so interesting when it was signed in 2020, is that NPS had not entered into a lot of these long-term leases. Usually they're short-term contracts with like a concessionaire to kind of run a property. And that's how these courses had been run before National Links Trust stepped in, was just, you know, a short, maybe not a year-to-year deal, but certainly not a 50-year deal. So there's not a lot of precedent in how these go, but the folks I talked to that have handled contracts with NPS say they've never seen anything like this. You know, if there ever was a default notice, it is lengthy, and there are, you know, very specific things that need to be addressed. And not only that, but there's conversations that precede it and follow the default notice. You know, about how to address those concerns, and that just didn't happen here in a way that NLT felt like they had any options, that there was anything they can do. So, nothing about this is normal. And as one longtime veteran NPS employee told me, he's like, it's not normal, but it's also not surprising, because let me see, what was the quote she said? The reality is nothing is normal right now. Here I'm looking at now, contracts, agreements, leases, literally nothing is done the way we would have normally done them. And that's a woman named Gail Hazelwood, who was a longtime NPS superintendent and negotiated, several contracts on the government's behalf.
am I correct in also thinking that, you know, it's hard not to just, there's so many ways to go here. It's hard not to bounce around the timeline, but this sets a crazy precedent because, you know, looking full, you know, looking ahead, let's say this continues ahead. NLT is out. The Trump administration takes over. Then what? The National Park Service is not going to run these going forward. Like you said, in the past, they've had concessionaires. They signed up this lease. Am I correct in thinking that they are going to try to find a new leaseholder, whether that be a new organization that is, you know, tied to the administration, or can the National Park Service just operate them without a leaseholder?
Yeah, I mean, we're just speculating, and I think there's really no rule book for this, and the way the administration kind of handles some of these is kind of impossible to guess sometimes, but knowing what we know and the way NPS has traditionally done things, yeah, you'd think there'd be some kind of RFP that would come out looking for a new leaseholder, either to manage the properties or to refurbish the properties. Maybe there are two different RFPs. Maybe it's one thing. But yeah, I could see, I mean, they need someone to run the day-to-day. So they need some kind of concessionaire to come in, you would think, to handle that. Is that the same people that are going to reimagine East Potomac? I have a hard time thinking that. Right. And again, they probably got to move quickly unless they reach some deal with NLT to stay on board indefinitely or for a year or more. So I kind of wonder if we're going to see an RFP pop up on the government websites, you know, in the next few weeks, looking for some new person to manage these properties. But, you know, clearly they've had discussions and the Trump team has thoughts on what they want to do with East Potomac. They've announced nothing. They've shared nothing. So a lot of it's, you know, we're hearing secondhand or from folks that were part of some of the conversations. But if I had to guess, yeah, we're going to see some new group come in, maybe multiple groups, maybe one running the day to day and booking tea times and one actually reimagining the courses and redesigning what East Potomac could be, which, as we all know, which is something NLT has been, you know, sure, ways down the road on from day one.
There's certainly a lot of speculation, but have you, as a reporter, have you gotten any murmurings or any evidence to suggest that whatever that new organization would be to operate these courses, you know, how tied to Trump himself, the Trump organization, Trump family, might that be?
Yeah. Again, it's hard to say. You know, yeah, you suspect that Trump would be familiar with whoever's going to come in. And, you know, Trump is, we know he's played a firsthand role in this process. We don't think he's ever actually played on this course, but he's flies over it. He cares about courses. He has thoughts. And we know that he's had several conversations with people, specifically about East Potomac. So I have a hard time thinking he wouldn't be familiar or knowledgeable with whoever is doing at least the redesign. I'm not sure he cares about who's, you know, flipping the hamburgers at the grill at Langston. But I think he wants to have a very hands-on role with the people that are going to be doing the work at East Potomac. So I'll be very curious to see what names pop up. We know that there's been, you know, people close to Trump that have kind of held hands throughout this process and gotten it from point A to the termination notice. So I can't imagine they're suddenly going to back away and leave it to NPS or Interior to sort it out without some kind of White House advisement.
How do you, and this is less reporter, more prognosticator a little bit, and I know I've asked you a couple of these, and I know it's not your, maybe not your wheelhouse, but there's so many questions, again, setting this baseline or precedent going forward. I mean, you've got midterms in less than a year. You've got, in theory, a new administration in less than 3 years now. Let's say they put a new leaseholder in place and sign a new 50-year lease, or not, they send a concessionaire, whatever is in place, you know, what happens in 3 years if there's a new administration that's not aligned with Trump and his policies? What do they do? Do these golf courses become part of the, you know, political system that gets, you know, it's whoever's operating them, just depends on who's in the White House?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of precedent here being set, right? Just tearing up leases and contracts, you know, and this is obviously, we've seen this in several areas, far from golf course management. But it's almost, you know, what do they want to do? I talked to Representative Jared Huffman. He's a Democrat from California, and he's the top Democrat on the House Committee on Natural Resources. And I said, you know, the Dems could control the House in a couple of years. Would the committee take up this issue? Would they think it's worthy of an investigation or any kind of probe? And his response was basically, you know, we'll have to add it to the list. So there's a lot of things that, you know, lawmakers have an interest in, and this could rise to that. It could be bundled together with other things. You know, I haven't noticed, this is my personal observation, it doesn't feel like this is resonating outside of golf community as much. Not like the Kennedy Center and the name change there.
Do you think it should? Because I argue it's a bigger story. The reason I think it's a bigger issue is, you know, even the East Wing, okay, the White House is, you know, a bigger story than three local golf courses. But again, in theory, the Trump administration is out of the White House in 3 years. The next administration and future administrations can deal with the ballroom how they want. But if the golf courses aren't a priority for future administrations, and this administration can sign a new 50-year lease or longer, then you could have an organization with strong ties to this specific administration in control of close to 500 acres of National Park Service land in our nation's capital, which that's why I think it's a story that should resonate outside of golf.
Yeah. And who knows who ends up taking on that next lease. I mean, it could be cronies. It could be, I mean, for all we know, Trump Golf is going to be putting in a proposal. We just don't know. I mean, it's something that seems like, you know, preposterous on the face, but you know, I guess I wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point.
Are there any, this is kind of taking a turn here a little bit, but you also wrote a recent piece about the tennis center up in Rock Creek and the RFP that was just issued, and how that RFP was likely or seemingly designed for Mark Ein, I believe. And I'm just kind of curious, I mean, a very different situation, obviously. But are there any similarities that I'm not seeing between, you know, how this administration is operating between these two scenarios?
I think what jumps out to me is the process with that RFP. You know, normally when the government puts out a request for proposal for these kind of properties, you know, it's months and months, maybe more than a year to allow people to tour the site, put together their proposal, you know, before a contract or a lease is actually rewarded. And what's so curious about this one they're doing with the Rock Creek Tennis Center is that they want it turned around in a matter of weeks. And that's what's kind of led to a lot of conjecture around the tennis community here that, you know, they actually don't want competitive bids. They want to design this RFP process in a way that one person's going to bid and he's going to get the contract. And so if we want to think about how this could apply to what's going on in East Potomac or with the golf courses, you know, you can see a world where there is a similar RFP process. You know, if the administration has a known entity they want to run this, they can very easily put together another abbreviated RFP process where everyone's got, you know, just weeks or days to put in their bid. And, you know, it's not a reasonable amount of time for people to put in a proposal that could cover 50 years and millions of dollars. So I think if you want to connect the dots, I think that's it, is the way they're handling this RFP for tennis center. Is that what we're going to see when they ultimately put an RFP out for these golf courses? It seems like it's very possible.
Sure. But it's still anyone's guess if an RFP for these golf courses is even coming. I mean, that's not even a definite. I mean,
again, there's just no rule book. And if there has been a rule book, the administration has shown they're not necessarily interested in, you know, what the rules have been for the past several decades. They seem to know what they want, and they just figure out the best, easiest, quickest way to get there.
In your opinion, so I imagine most people are speculating, I think correctly, that there will be lawsuits from National Links Trust disputing this termination of the lease with the administration. I'm trying to think of ways that this could be slowed down or this could be blocked aside from the National Links Trust itself suing the administration. You know, do you foresee other lawsuits being filed or other ways that this takeover of the golf courses could be slowed?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it is going to be legal channels where this kind of plays out. And if you want to look at the East Wing or Kennedy Center, I mean, that's kind of your precedent. The Trump administration does what they're going to do and they put their name on the thing or they start tearing down buildings. And then the legal process maybe slows things down. And you know, we're starting to see that with the East Wing a little bit. and you know, the administration has to present their proposal and their plans to the courts now. So yeah, you could see something like that here. Interestingly, NLT, I think because they agreed to stay on board, you know, they didn't file anything immediately. We didn't see a breach of contract lawsuit or a request for temporary restraining order or something like that that would halt the termination. And maybe that would have been different if, you know, things played out differently. And you got to remember, this was not great timing for NLT either. They've got equipment spread across three courses, millions of dollars of equipment. If the termination note is dropped and they had to immediately vacate, you know, how do they move all these mowers and all the stuff they have in the place? And then what do they do about all the employees? You know, I think it's 140 or so current employees, but that obviously balloons up in the spring and summertime. You know, they would have been in a really tough spot too if they didn't agree to stay on board and kind of help with the transition. So I'll be curious. I do think legal steps is what we're going to see next, and I'll be very curious what they look like, who's filing them, and ultimately what a court decides. There's been so many contracts that the government has kind of torn up or trampled over, and we've seen mixed results. You know, when the courts decide, you know, how valid their actions are. So we might be days away or weeks away from seeing some of this stuff filed, but I will be curious what it looks like and what the courts ultimately see here.
I agree. I mean, I think the Nationalist Trust did the right move, and it just shows kind of the difference of between the intentions of NLT versus the intentions of the administration. If they had not taken this over, there have been a lot of people lose their jobs. Golf courses would have been closed immediately. And I also think that, to your point, that this keeps a, you know, maybe it's a glimmer, but a glimmer of hope that there could be some resolution between the two parties if the administration realizes they've got bigger fish to fry. But doesn't certainly seem that way.
Well, I'm not sure how much they even care about Rock Creek Park or Langston. You know, right. I've heard some murmurs that Langston is interesting to them because they see that area near RFK, where a new football stadium is going up. They see a lot of value in that, and maybe. And, you know, we saw reports that Tiger Woods was going to play a role in helping redesign Langston. So, but then you hear other times where really they're just solely focused on East Potomac. So if for some reason they are locked in East Potomac and aren't as interested in the other two courses, well, they still got to figure out something to do with them and someone to run them. So maybe NLT ends up submitting a request for proposal and they end up with another lease. I don't know.
Yeah. You had said earlier that the story doesn't seem to be resonating that far outside of golf yet. Is that what you're seeing, like, as you know, at the Washington Post, based on clicks and reads and all that, that this is not resonating quite as much as we think?
Just a bit of conjecture and what my kind of observations are when I watch what, you know, mainstream news outlets are reporting or spending time on, and what we see kind of in social media. Obviously my feed's filled with a lot of golf chatter. But no, I mean, I haven't noticed that the major broadcast networks, NLT did do a MS Now, formerly MSNBC interview, this week. So a little bit's there, but part of it's also the timing. You know, they dropped this termination notice right before the end of the year. Well, no one's working on Capitol Hill right now. All the lawmakers are out of town. So you don't have people, you know, making a fuss over it. And possible they didn't even notice because they dropped the thing, you know, right before New Year's Eve. And kind of did it quietly. So I don't think they wanted a lot of attention. You know, it's not going away. I mean, the Washington Post is still going to give it the attention it deserves. I'm glad that you're keeping it fresh and keeping people updated. And I'll be very curious when lawmakers do return to DC and begin work here. If it's a matter that actually does matter to them, or if they think they got bigger fish to fry still.
Last question. Do you, and I think, I feel like I know the answer based on a lot of your responses, but, as you see it today, you know, do you feel like NLT got a raw deal?
Oh, that's probably not for me to say. You know, my colleague Barry Sverluger could probably have a better, you know, better opinion about that. But, I mean, I'll just again point out that based on the folks I've talked to that are familiar with some of these contracts and leases, the process has been abnormal and curious. You know, as a DC resident and a golfer, you know, familiar with these courses, I mean, I've noticed improvements over the past 5 years, and you know, I certainly value affordable golf that allows a wide range of people to access and afford to get on. And I know that's what NLT's mission was. So I do appreciate the work they've done, and whether they're the ones running the courses or some other entity or the federal government's running the courses, you know, I hope that affordable golf is a thing that we're going to have in the district for years to come. My own game depends on it. So,
right. Might as well. That's a good answer. I appreciate it very much. I asked for a half an hour of your time here on the day after New Year's. We're over that time. So I appreciate it very much joining the Beltway Golfer podcast, Rick, and appreciate all your great reporting with Washington Post.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for having me. And thanks for, keeping this out there. It's an important topic, you know, whether people golf or not. And obviously the golf community is very, very invested in, and cares about how this goes. So hopefully we'll be able to answer some of these lingering questions in the coming weeks.